Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the 76th. You know what? It's good. We'll just keep that in there. I can't say 76. I don't know why I attempted to do it. It's such a random number. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
We should call this the burner edition.
Yeah.
After the 76ers and Brian Colangelo.
And
we should call the burner pod edition.
Yeah, and maybe we should have burned the intro to that. But we'll just keep going.
You stumbled all over the place. Yeah. I stepped all over you.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a flying start.
Here we go. We got hot takes. We got Muskoka talk. We got a lot to get into today, Bob.
Do you want to start with Muskoka talk?
Well, here's what I love. So I was up at my cottage for 2 days. Girlfriend took it off. So we went up just to celebrate, you know, just to go hang out for my birthday. No big deal. Just get away. And man, the weather was perfect. But here's the thing I love. Bob Mackowitz and I engaged in a legitimate conversation about how warm the lake is. And maybe for Bob, it's something he would have known because of science. But part of me thinks it's because Bob is now becoming a cottager. So because of that, he is now more acutely aware of what goes on with how warm a lake is.
It's fake news, Matt. It's all fake news that you're spreading. I had a cottage growing up.
Uh-huh.
But here's the difference, though. I had a cottage the way that immigrants after the Second World War who came to Canada bought cottages for their kids.
Yep.
I don't know how it was in other communities, but we basically had a life raft mentality where all the Ukrainians from the village got small little properties on the same circle, Farley Circle, yeah, up at Jackson's Point.
Yeah.
We didn't have a toilet, Matt.
Mm. Were you on the water?
We were adjacent. Like, we were a 5-minute walk from the water.
Okay. So, yeah, that is...
No. It was nice. It was great. I loved it. One of the best parts of growing up. But yeah, when you don't have a toilet...
Okay.
I don't know if you can call it a cottage as much as a...
It's a shack.
A place you go.
It's a place you go. But, Bob, why are you running...
Two rooms, many, many people.
Yeah. Then you know what? I bet that's filled with warm and happy memories.
It was family. Great.
Yeah, of course.
Fantastic. We had a toaster. We had one of those toasters, and instead of like popping the toast in the top in the slots, they had open flaps like they did in the 1950s.
Yeah.
Like this toaster must have been circa 1940.
Yeah.
Like they probably brought it over with them. And you would lay the toast in on either side and then seal it up and then open it up again like a little hatch.
I bet you got a better toaster now at your place in Deerhurst.
they provide one.
Why are you running away from your cottage, your cottage destiny? Embrace the dark side.
You make me sound like Borat when Borat's in the hotel room for the first time. Look at me. I'm the king.
King of the castle.
I got a chair.
And the best part, he's in the elevator and he starts immediately changing and doesn't realize that's actually not his hotel room. Oh, I miss that movie.
Oh, so anyway, water temperature is something I grew up with because I grew up swimming in the lakes.
Yeah. So
there's that.
Yeah.
Actually, we could jump ahead and just dive past one of my dot, dot, dots. I'm going to do a dot, dot, dot later. But my weekend was defined by my daughter's first ever baseball game.
Oh.
She never played T-ball. It was great. I was terrified.
Yeah.
Because they had a pitching machine.
Yeah.
And she never played T-ball. And she never really took to baseball either, right? Like in the last couple of weeks, we knew we were going to join the league. You know, we'd kind of soft underhand toss her the ball, let her take some wax. But she did not go in there.
Yeah.
Knowing much baseball. 2 for 2 with 2 RBI.
Oh, that's great, Bob. That's great.
And yes, I did pace while she was at the plate.
Yeah. How was it defensively? Because at that age.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Age, I went to see my littlest nephew, Elliot, play. And defense at that age is quite poor. It's hilarious.
So the opposing coach.
By the way, they tackle each other trying to stop an infield hit.
That's good hustle.
Yeah.
That's good hustle. That's good board work.
It's selfish. But
fair enough. The opposing coach fell out of quick favor with our coach because you know how when they throw it in and nobody can catch it, so it's coming in from the outfield?
Yeah.
But none of the infielders can catch the ball. So it just skips to the other side of the diamond, and then you try to throw it back in, and the other coach let his players keep running.
Yeah.
So they were constantly racking up home runs because no one could catch the ball.
Yeah.
And our coach, after about an inning or two, was just sort of like, okay, Chihuahuas, because that's the name of her team.
Yeah.
We're just playing our game here. We're playing our game.
It's fun.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was really good. I could easily be a baseball dad.
Mm-hmm.
Easily.
You know what the key, though, at that age, or just any at that time? Shade. Because when I went, it was one of the hot days last weekend. And the key was there was trees nearby. So we were under shade. The other diamond was all out in the sun. And I remember looking at my twin brother going, I feel bad for those parents. Because we got shade here.
You were like a 40-year-old man in an 8-year-old's body, though. Mm-hmm. Right? Like you had a perspective on things that was, it was mature.
Oh, yeah. 100%. And I was a hell of a grass picker.
All right, so talking about playing our game, we can talk about NBA Finals start tonight, LeBron versus the Warriors. Mm-hmm. Game 2 went last night, very exciting NHL final. We can talk Brian Colangelo, we alluded to it earlier with his alleged Twitter burner accounts. Or we can start with the Jays. Because it was your birthday, Matt, and because I got you nothing, and even if I did, I wouldn't give it to you till you were 45.
By the way, I brought your book up.
How was it?
It's great. It's a perfect summer read. Judd Apatow interviewing comedians. I'm sitting on the dock. Yeah, let me tell you, there's no more glorious thing in life than it's Tuesday at 11:30 in the morning. I'm eating mango and having Chardonnay, reading that book, overlooking the lake. Oh,
that does sound pretty good.
It was glorious.
And in case you missed a couple pods ago, we laughed because I bought Matt a birthday present in 2015, which I gave to him on two pods.
Yeah,
2 pods ago.
Yeah. You know what? Dope.
Where do you want to start? That's my gift to you.
You know what? I'm going to go something different, and I'm going to start Blue Jays.
Ooh.
Only because I have a hot take.
Okay, go for it.
I sort of came up with it. I have two hot takes that are sort of related. But the first is the Toronto Marlies are more relevant to professional sports in Toronto than the Blue Jays. Because at least the Marlies have got guys going on now to the Calder Final that are relevant with the Maple Leafs. The Blue Jays right now... Who on this roster is going to be relevant in 3 or 4 years? Maybe Sanchez, maybe Stroman. One is injured and one isn't playing well.
It's a shocking take, but I kind of agree with you that if you're interested in the Toronto sports scene, this is temporary because in a couple of years, the Jays, it's not like we're saying the Marlies have leapfrogged the Jays. I mean, it's a very temporary situation.
This is about May 31st, 2018.
And I got to admit, I was on the website this morning of the Marlies.ca looking for tickets for the upcoming final.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I, though? It's going to be great. They made it to the final, and you're going to see, you know, Johnson, Kapanen, all these young players.
Travis Dermott, Timothy Liljegren, Miro Altonen. If JVR and Bozak and Komarov are gone, well, who's going to replace them? You can watch them against the Dallas or Texas team, whoever they are.
I think I hit bottom with the Jays when they started Russell Martin in left field. I was willing to accept shortstop because he has played some infield before. But when they put him in left field, and we officially now are approaching half the positions on the diamond that he's played.
Yeah.
And Kendrys Morales pitched. So now it's starting to feel like a Sloan concert where everybody just switches instruments and does whatever the hell they want.
Oh, my God. That's a great reference. It's just so painful.
Yeah, just it so really painful. Is.
Yeah.
9-19 in the month of May. They just got swept by the Red Sox and looked embarrassed doing so. And Josh Donaldson's health. Like this, because we have Vladdy Guerrero coming up, everybody's excited about that. But can you think of a guy who is as great for a Toronto team as Josh Donaldson, who is limping to the end as quietly as this?
It's quickly, like the swing... has been MVP of 2015. 2016, his numbers were basically as good as 15.
They were great.
2017, when he was finally healthy, he put together a great 2 months or so of baseball near the end. And this year, it's been just one big crap show.
You know, Bautista had the kind of slow walk off into the sunset. You know, just
and
a
he was
little...
older, 3-4 years older.
100%.
So you could see it coming. This was, Oh God. And now, you know, Buster Olney's writing articles about how hitters after 32 can't hit 93 miles per hour fastballs anymore.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Buster Olney has become the voice of doom for the Jays quietly.
Yeah.
Every time I look at what he's writing, even if he's not writing about the Jays, it always feels like it describes the Jays situation, whether it's the age of players or, you know, how the home run rate has gone up and strikeouts have gone up and there's nothing in the middle anymore. And, you know, Jays aren't really hitting home runs.
Yep.
Sure are striking out a lot, though.
They sure are.
Holy jeez. Marco Estrada looks like he needs to go to the National League.
Yeah.
He needs to regain the element of surprise. Maybe hitters who aren't used to him, he can succeed against them, but he's not going anywhere in the American League. Who the hell's going to trade for him?
No one. That's the problem is that, you know, you thought, okay, well, things are bad. Donaldson, you can get a lot for. Estrada, you could get some stuff. Happ, but now it's like, now the only thing we're rooting for is Donaldson to put together a hot month so you can trade him and get something decent back.
It's 100% right. It's the one hot month. Just enough so they can go out and say,
look at this, see? She still got it.
You knew Tulo was going to bring nothing. I mean, we've been kind of seeing that happen for the last 18 months or so.
Yeah.
This one, it's not that it comes out of nowhere, but I'll tell you, when they talked about his dead arm at the end of spring training, did you not get a shiver up your spine and say, oh, man, we're going to get some lousy prospects for him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Was it Donaldson had a dead arm?
Yeah, it was Donaldson.
Yeah, Donaldson dead arm, and it was Tulowitzki where he had more bone. Like, I think
bone spurs.
Yeah, I think he actually has more bone spurs than any other human. He's got more. They're all injured.
He's got more bone spurs than hits.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Both great players, but, you know, the Donaldson thing makes me sad. And we saw this again with Bautista because you hate it when a guy misplays his career and doesn't get the big payday.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah, you want Donaldson one more big deal. You wanted Bautista. You know, you wanted both of them. You wanted things to end up, you know, all dogs go to heaven versus old Yeller. And that's kind of what it feels like, where just all of a sudden they're being taken out to the back and shot.
When they left him, when they didn't put him in the game, it was 8-3, and they were rising up against the Red Sox. And, yeah, you know, they had bases loaded, and you've got Josh Donaldson available.
Time for a pinch hitter.
Right.
And they didn't bring him?
And they didn't bring him.
That says to me, don't say he's day-to-day.
Yeah.
You know, he is not day-to-day. If you didn't bring him up then, you know, it's not like you asked him to do cartwheels. You just asked him, get to the bat.
Get a hit.
Get a hit. Just get a hit.
And we'll pinch run for you the second you're on first base.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, but...
Yeah, so there's that. Yeah, over the last couple of weeks, I've been saying on the pod how I continue to find the Jays interesting. Where I cease to find them interesting is, as you suggested, I'm not watching young players coming up. I'm watching bits and pieces that won't have a future with the club.
Yeah.
Not winning.
I'm watching a whole bunch of spare parts that they brought in hoping they could cobble together, and that if the rotation was great, maybe they'd compete for the second wildcard spot. I mean, that's the problem. The problem with the Blue Jays coming into the year was the best case scenario was 85 wins.
Yeah.
And best case scenarios rarely ever happen.
It's true. They happen to the Raptors, and you see how excited you can get. You know, well, that's true. They were actually a victim of the best case scenario. But so there you have it. The Jays, we started off with them. That's a bit of a surprise, Matt. But you did have your hot take.
No, I have a second hot take.
About the Jays?
No. The second hot take is going to connect all the different sports.
Really?
Let me throw it out to you.
Okay.
And we can discuss it, or we can get into .. or the fact that there's a shuttlecock in your bathroom.
Like
there I was washing my hands, and you got a badminton shuttlecock right next to the sink.
Yeah.
Just like,
kids.
Just random. Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Kids. All right.
I didn't even notice it.
Yeah. The Toronto Marlies would have a better chance of beating the Washington Capitals than the Cleveland Cavaliers do of beating the Golden State Warriors.
Okay, now that's stupid.
Nope.
That's totally ridiculous. All right, I'm going to sit back and let you explain this because I like you enough to not hang you with your own rope just yet.
Yeah. Garrett Sparks is playing well enough to easily be the backup goaltender for the Toronto Maple Leafs next year.
True.
Kapanen, Dermott, Andreas Johnsson all played a great part of the season with the Maple Leafs and were all considered contributing parts, young parts. And not only that, guys who, you know, can be like Dermott could be easily. I mean, Dermott is. He's a top four defenseman. Easily. Andreas Johnsson and Kapanen, these guys are not fourth liners. These guys can contribute and get you 40, 50 points in the NHL, you know, once given time. So you have all those parts. You have some other young guys, Liljegren, high draft pick, Miro Altonen, a guy who's ready to make it into the NHL. The nature of hockey, where you can hide talent disparities greater in that sport than you can in basketball, where you need a hot goalie and just some timely bounces and you get some young legs. The Marlies have all that. What's going on, what's about to happen in basketball is the greatest talent gap since 2000 when Philadelphia took on, with Allen Iverson and a bunch of stiffs, took on Kobe and Shaq. The only difference, this Golden State team has more talent than that 2000 and 2001 Laker team. The only shock to me about the Golden State Warriors is somehow they weren't engaged and dicked around and got seven and had to go seven games against the very game Houston team. And kudos to everything with the Rockets. But when I look at the talent disparity, ugh, I think the Marlies got a better chance of beating Washington than the Cavs do of beating Golden State.
Okay, so let's take this in two parts.
Sure.
We'll start with the Marlies and the Caps.
Yeah.
You make an interesting point about the different nature of hockey and basketball.
And that's a part of the reason for this hot take.
And that's a fair point. They are different. That, you know, every so often an NCAA team comes along that's really great, like the Kentucky Wildcats a few years ago, and people were like, oh, I bet they could beat the worst team. Or the Alabama Crimson Tide could beat the Cleveland Browns.
Which is dumb.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Because what you have, like you listed a bunch of people who were NHLers.
Yeah.
And a goalie who's probably going to be quite a good goalie.
Yeah.
But there's so many gaps in that. There's so many gaps. Like the Washington Capitals were good enough to make the final.
Yep.
They have the greatest goal scorer in history. Mm-hmm. They have Braden Holtby, who is a first line excellent goaltender. Like I don't even
not for the first two games. He was benched. He wasn't even the starter when the playoffs started.
I'm not going to dignify this argument any further because I think the point is obvious that the talent gap between a Marlies team, which is quite good for an AHL team, and a team that makes the NHL final, I think that speaks for itself.
Okay.
Secondly, I think you're disparaging the Cavs unnecessarily.
Really?
Yeah, I do. Because the one thing we don't know is the health of Kevin Love. Even before we started the pod, I looked it up.
And
we're not sure if he's going to start game one.
And by the way, that's part of this whole argument, is that Kevin Love, dealing with a concussion, he's iffy for this series.
Right. Right. No, that's
true.
If
Kevin Love is out, who's the second best player on Cleveland?
Oh! Well, it's probably George Hill.
Oh!
Yeah, no, I agree. This is like the team that, you know, the Eric Snow year, where they went to the finals with LeBron, they rode his back. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But I can't disagree that this is probably going to be a bludgeoning. I can't disagree that it's probably going to be a sweep or five games. If it goes to six, that would be quasi-miraculous. Totally.
That'd be greater than anything MJ ever did.
It'd be like six flu games in a row.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree with you there. But if Love is healthy, I don't think it's that nuts to think they could take this to six games.
I do. And
let's not forget who Kevin Love is.
I know.
Kevin Love is an all-star who's a dynamic defensive rebounder and hits threes and causes havoc for defenses because he forces big men to come out further than they would like.
Yep.
And the one thing we know that LeBron loves is guys who can hit shots and guys who create spacing for him to do what he wants. So all I'm saying is, if Love is healthy, and we've seen them be good in spurts, they're not nearly as good as the Cavs or as the Warriors.
Nope.
But they're not as bad as people would like to say.
I'm going to disagree, and I'm going to I have the advantage of I got to look this up on the show today.
Okay.
I went back to last year's NBA Finals.
Okay.
Golden State blew them out in five. In one of those blowouts, one of those games, LeBron, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love combined for close to 80 points, 25 assists, 17, 18 rebounds. They shot collectively well over 50%. They lost by 19 points.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's no more Kyrie Irving, and we're wondering about Kevin Love.
Okay, that's a fair point. Although I would argue that maybe Golden State's not as good this year as they were last year.
I just don't think
I actually think they should have lost to the Rockets. If they would have had Chris Paul in that lineup,
Chris
the Rockets
in,
probably
different.
Would have beaten the Golden State Warriors.
Which would have been a choke job. Which would have been a massive choke job.
But this team, look, I think they're going to win in four or five. It's not like I don't see the talent disparity.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be more competitive than maybe you give it credit for. Only because of the analogy you drew at the beginning of the argument.
Yeah.
Right? Which is like you believe in the Marlies beating the Caps.
Yeah,
more than you believe in the Cavs beating the Warriors.
I've set the bar low. And let me say this on the front end: these guys on Golden State are phenomenal players.
Mm-hmm.
They are also incredibly selfless. They have sacrificed money, fame, shots, points to win a title.
Mm-hmm.
Golden State's management is great. They put together this team. Steve Kerr, give him credit for this. Mark Jackson had that same team. Steve Kerr made them better. I give praise to everyone, period, full stop. But then at the same point, I'm not impressed when they win because of the gap in talent. And I'll give you a rest.
It's like the dream team.
Yeah, it's like the when the dream team beats Senegal, it's like, what are you more impressed with? When Hulk Hogan defeated Leaping Lanny Poffo, or when Hulk Hogan slammed Andre the Giant at the Pontiac Silverdome? Which one was more impressive?
Okay.
Because one was about, like, I would love to see Golden State take on a team that they were evenly matched with. I would do bleeping backflips. So.
Well, I think you saw it with Houston. When they lost Chris Paul,
yeah.
Even though they had home court for Game 7, you could. I don't think with Chris Paul on the floor, they wind up going 0-27 for three.
No.
Right. I just because I think they have an extra option. Like, I could see Chris Paul, even though Houston doesn't do this, just driving into the mid, you know, like 15 feet and just hit a couple J's just to break up some runs.
Yeah.
I think that he's a veteran enough to know, okay, this is... I kind of admit, like, they almost lost on ideological terms. Like, they refused to stop being who they were. They trusted the math. The math bit them in the ass.
Sure did.
You know? But I think with Chris Paul, it would have been a different outcome. So all I'm saying is that Golden State are not invincible. They were very vincible and got lucky that Chris Paul wasn't in that game.
I gotta be honest with you. I was shocked how disengaged Golden State looked.
Also, in the first half, they started looking angry at each other and even admitted to it as such. They were starting to be out of sorts.
And in their losses, Kevin Durant was bad.
Yeah.
He took so many bad shots. He was rushing things. Like, and the worst is Steve Kerr had to remind him to trust his teammates. Your teammates are Steph Curry, two-time MVP, Klay Thompson, who holds the record for the most points in a quarter, and Draymond Green. And by the way, it was so galling when they're like, oh, what are we going to do without Andre Iguodala? He's your fifth best player. And I know he's really good, and I know there's so many intangibles he brings, but get the hell out of here with that.
I don't think you're going to see him disengage in the final. And that does not speak well for the Cavs' chances.
No. Oh, no.
The fact that they came out flat against Houston, but they also knew, like, their third quarters have been nuts. They had a 19-point swing in that third quarter in a Game 7.
Yeah.
Part of that was because Houston wasn't hitting shots, and they were open shots. There were open shots that were being missed. That did not need to be as deliberate a swing as it was. It's not like Golden State shut them down. They kind of shut themselves down.
Yeah.
The Cavs are weird, though. The Cavs are really weird in that from quarter to quarter, they can go from looking awful to amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it really just comes down to, did Korver hit his shots?
Yeah.
Did Smith hit his shots? If they hit those threes, they look really hard to beat. If they don't, maybe you're right about the Marlies.
Yeah. I recognize the hot takeness of what I said.
Nah, you know. You came out sizzling. Like, your face is still red from the cottage.
Oh.
You've absorbed it into your pod game. Holy geez, Matt's lowering the hem of his t-shirt, and he is full lobster.
Full sunburnt. That's where the hot takes come from. The suntan lotion, it was expired.
Matt, I'm going to get some butter and some lemon and just serve you up.
Oh, I know. Like, just... Like, my chest right now, it is cooking.
Wow.
It is cooking.
Wow.
You know Golden
State? Did you get out the Noxzema?
Oh,
old school?
We got so many different just creams and things. And,
right.
Yeah.
Oh, Aloe vera is like Noxzema for rich people.
I didn't care. Just whatever. Just pour it all into a bucket and dump it on my chest.
Do you remember Solarcane?
Yeah.
Did you have Solarcane as a kid?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't do that anymore, eh?
Yeah.
Like, no, I haven't seen it in the drugstore in forever.
That's a good point. Where the hell is Solarcane?
Solarcane used to be like the cans of Off that you would walk around with. Like, you never went anywhere when you were up north as a kid unless you had a can of Off in your back pocket.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%.
We would, like, spray our faces with it. I remember thinking, this tastes bitter. Actually, it tastes like poison.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, but you know what? It made us tougher, not like these millennials.
Real tough.
One other thought about Golden State.
Okay.
Like about them being engaged or not. Golden State against Houston. When you used to go on dates, like high school and stuff.
Yep.
How much effort did you put into a date?
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Me too. I would, on a date, I would always make two reservations at two different restaurants that were very different. And I would ask, hey, what are you in the mood for? This or this? And if you're not interested in either, that's fine. Whatever you want to do. And like, I would do all this work and effort. And I did it because of insecurity about myself physically.
Matt, I meant I would brush my teeth and comb my hair.
Yeah. I did so much effort because, again, I always thought, why would a woman ever want to see me naked? I've got to do whatever I can to try to tip the odds.
You really were a 40-year-old man in a boy's body.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
You were the switcheroo.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So, you know who doesn't do that?
Hmm.
Like the really good-looking football star.
True.
Know, the quarterback of the team. He, in his mind, he's like, you're almost lucky to be dating me.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel Golden State is against Houston. They're like, eh, we don't really need to put that much effort into it. If they put Matt Cause, you know, actually, you know, got a date when he's 17, then, you know, I think Golden State would crush everyone by 70.
I think I've used this term on the pod before. I think you've heard me use it. But I call that the Brad Pitt's beard, where you are so good looking that you can grow a homeless guy's beard.
Yep.
And it's almost like you push it. How far can I go and still have people call me good looking?
Yeah.
Because, you know, with one razor, you go back to being Adonis.
Yeah.
But you're just testing the limits.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
All right. So let me ask you, like, we've obviously both agreed, like, there's no point in almost doing a preview because we both think Cleveland's going to get pounded, right?
Yeah.
They might make it to six if Kevin Love's healthy.
Yep.
They might. Mm-hmm. They might. But that's not exactly a glowing outlook for this team. But would a Raptors-style sweep at the hands of the Warriors hurt LeBron and the way they look at him? Like, if he goes out and gets devastated in four games and they never look competitive and he looks like he's run out of gas and answers, does that affect the way we look at this playoff run?
I don't think so. I think, you know, what we're seeing from LeBron is one of the best, maybe the best ever run by any player in the playoffs.
Which pretty amazing,
which
right?
is remarkable because he's now just getting to the finals. The odds were... if you bet $1,000 on Golden State to win the series, you'll get back 100. And that's not
it's
a 10
joke. To 1, I know.
Yeah, so I know. No, I like, okay, if some people will use this to denigrate LeBron at all, it's because they've got some goofy, stupid agenda that doesn't fit in with reality.
Agreed, but as we know from hearing the LeBron versus Michael conversations, people who have decided that LeBron's not great,
but I don't I think
are looking for anything.
I don't think anyone doesn't think LeBron's not great. I think people, like, if you want to say Michael's career is better than LeBron's, fine. That's not an insult. If you say there's a huge gap between the two, well, now we'll talk. I can easily say that Michael has had a better career than LeBron, but it's super duper close.
I think it's a fair point. They always come back to two arguments, the people who make the Michael over LeBron.
Yeah.
One is I hate LeBron because of the decision.
Yeah.
And he had to leave Cleveland in order. He couldn't make his team better.
Yeah.
He had to leave in order to win and then come back. And then the other one is Michael never lost in the final.
Yeah.
Whereas LeBron's gone 8 straight times to the final, which I think in a lot of ways with his teams is more impressive than the 6 wins.
Of those 8 teams, LeBron has been the favorite twice.
Mm-hmm.
Against the Dallas Mavericks, the only time you can really look at LeBron and go, you failed, was in those finals against the Dallas Mavericks. And the following year, actually against OKC, that had Durant, Westbrook, Harden, and Ibaka, Ibaka with a corpse was still, you know, kicking. Those were the only two times he has been favored in an NBA Finals. So, so to me, it's like, I don't care that he didn't win as much because he was going up against superior teams.
Do you know what the over-under was on LeBron scoring going into Game 7 against the Celtics?
I heard it today.
It was 34.5.
That's ridiculous.
That was the over-under.
Yeah.
From Vegas on how many points he'd score. And he hit the over comfortably. Yeah. Comfortably.
It's crazy. It's nuts. It's at the point where if you want to say LeBron's better than Michael, great. If you want to say Michael's better than LeBron, fine. I got no problem either way. I can't emotionally get upset if you pick one or the other.
You and I have made this point on the pod many times, which is we overrate the playoffs and underrate the regular season. Mm-hmm. Simply because we've all been conditioned to see the championship as the ultimate goal.
Yeah.
And so it's like anything that falls short of that doesn't really count.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the DeMar DeRozan point, which is you can have a great, in fact, mind-blowing regular season. But if you don't get it done in the playoffs, it doesn't really count, which is kind of not fair in a way.
It's not fair, but the difference is that DeRozan's play and his numbers so takes a step back. And because the team struggles so much in the playoffs, even against non-LeBron teams, I think that criticism's more justified. Anyone who wants to point to LeBron and say, you didn't win more finals, that's just a dummy argument because the other team was the better team.
See, it's interesting about this because you get this with Ovi now, too, is now there's a level of comfort that he's made a final,
yeah.
right? That now that you can at least say that he's been to the final. Now you can finally justify all these tags of greatness that were utterly justified before, just based on the numbers and the performance over 15 years of a career. But we do have, see, I started thinking about this a lot. Is it fair to say you can only be truly a great player, not an excellent one, but a great player, if you have elevated your team to a final?
See, you texted me that yesterday, and I was thinking about it.
Yeah, be it resolved that.
Be it resolved that.
To be a truly great player, you have to at least make a final with your team.
In some cases, yes, and I'm going to list it off.
In some cases, yes, too. I got my own list. Yeah. Okay, here, you go for
my list is an incredibly short list. NFL quarterback.
Yep.
And NBA superstar.
I would add one more to that.
Ooh, okay.
NHL goalie. That's the Dominic Hasek provision.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Because what it comes down to for me is how much influence does one individual have over the outcome of the game? NBA superstar has a ton. The NFL quarterback has a ton.
Yep.
And the NHL goalie, I think, has a ton as well. Like we've seen goalies lift their teams through individual series multiple times.
Yeah.
Go on deep runs. If you're going to be a truly great goalie, I got to believe you probably can't put your team on your back for four rounds.
It's funny. I was trying to think of who's the truly elite, great, first ballot Hall of Fame goalie that didn't make the finals. And off the top of my head, I can't think of any.
I can't really think of any either.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think back to when the Leafs faced Hasek back in Buffalo. And it was just, you know, what are you going to do with that?
That his run from the Olympics, you know, with him and the Czechs, from there to Hasek with Buffalo. And eventually he wins a cup with Detroit. But, oh my God, there's about a 4 or 5 year run where... You know.
Now, he did win a cup, to your point, but, my thinking was just like that Buffalo team wasn't better than the Leafs.
No, but Hasek was better. Like, Cleveland is not better than Indiana, Toronto, or Boston, but LeBron just did Bron things.
So I'm not sure that Ovi really falls into that category, you know, but there is always that tough, you know. As much as I don't even believe it, it's hard not to get seduced by that. Yes, he had great numbers, but did he win?
Well, it's because... Okay, on the pro side of Ovechkin, you have to, you know, his legacy will be judged partially by getting the finals. You can do it on this. He played on a lot of really good teams. He won teams, you know, that were first place, teams that won the President's Trophy. So when a truly transcendent player is on a great team and they get bounced in the second round, and when often cases they're up in playoff series and then they're up 2-1 or 3-1 and they gag it, it does give you pause. On the other side, he don't play defense. He don't play net. Right. So those are the conflicting arguments, and it's just where you fall in there.
You know what really hit me and really dawned on me? And it was when the Vegas Knights, the Golden Knights, made the final. We're really standing on the cusp of it, a truly incredible sports story.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like...
Outlier.
I'm one of those people who all along has said, yeah, but they'll run out of steam. Whether, you know, they were first in the conference. No, but I was really like, look... Yeah. I almost didn't really emotionally engage with them because I figured they'll just turn back into a pumpkin at some point.
Yeah.
But if they win, and they probably could have won game two. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was the amazing save
by Holtby.
Holtby at the 2 minute mark left, you know, to keep it from going to overtime. But in general, like, they just look really good. They look comfortable and confident. And, you know, they had that 5-on-3 and didn't score. And if they would have scored during that 5-on-3, I actually don't like Washington's chances going home with a win. I think it would be 2-0 right now. It was that close.
Oh, yeah.
So my point sort of being, how crazy is it that a team of NHL castoffs are on the cusp of possibly winning the hardest to win trophy in all of team sports? Like, is there anything else? Like, we talk about the Miracle Mets, but the Miracle Mets, that wasn't their first year. There was just a terrible year. Like, this is a first-year expansion team on the cusp of winning a major North American trophy.
It's an outlier unlike any others.
Unlike
any others, period, full stop. I remember asking, like, Dreger, Bob McKenzie, this was before the playoffs started. I'm like, do you have an equivalent to just William Karlsson? And they're all like, nope, we have no idea. There's at least five players, all of them, who have set career highs in points, goals, and assists, and things like that. You know, the one thing you can point to is Marc-Andre Fleury. You know, if he isn't doing what he's doing, they don't get this far. But this is the single most unique thing in the history of hockey, and it's certainly the most amazing thing we've seen in professional sports.
I'm a big fan of Ovi's. Especially because he's the guy who defied the narrative. Because a few years back, everyone was writing him off, myself included. Yeah. Because logic would say a guy who played that heavy brand of hockey would eventually slow down, and he would be a good player, but not a great player. I mean, there's just logic and historical precedent suggested that.
Yeah.
And he defied the odds, and he's still transcendent. Yeah. And I love that. And if he could raise the cup, I mean, he's an amazing individual. Personality-wise, he owns Washington, this, you know, pretty sad city to own. But anyway, that's a great story.
Yeah.
But even I have to say, how do you not vote for Vegas at this point? Because that you could play another 250 years of NHL hockey and introduce an expansion team every year, and that won't happen again.
Yep. Oh, 100%. It's why we said going into it, like the hard part of this playoff, of this finals, is you don't have any sports hate. You don't, you're not rooting against anyone. It's the classic. It's the hooray for everyone Stanley Cup Finals, you know, and all you're really rooting for is more of the pregame stuff, the pregame spectacle, which is hilarious.
I kept thinking to myself, if people think Kyle Dubas is no good for hockey, what do they think of Little John?
Oh yeah. What? Yeah. It's great. Ooh, God, we got to do some sponsors.
No, let's do a sponsorship thing, and then we'll get into Brian Colangelo on the other side.
Oh, my God, we haven't even got into that. How? Because I got big thoughts on that. Okay, you know what? Speaking of big thoughts, actually, you know what I had to do last week? I went and finally signed my will. Everything was set, done, I's are dotted, T's are crossed, and no one could have made it easier than Jeff Pollock. He is my lawyer. He should be your lawyer, jeffpollock.com. That's jeffpollock.com with a G. But again, he does everything from litigation, states and trusts, corporate, commercial, real estate law. It's a small little family law firm, but everyone who works there are just really successful people, and they truly enjoy what they do. They'll call you up. You know, you can call them at any time and someone will get back to you, not like a big giant law firm. 416-777-0088. The number again, 416-777-0088.
They actually, Jeff sent me an email last week to shame me because I haven't followed up on my will.
Yeah.
And he sent me a long sort of email, really well written and quite friendly and personal, but it was almost like he was worried about me.
Yeah.
It's like, Bob, bad things happen all the time. And you need to have this done. Like,
he told me those stories as well. And I'm like, Jeff, don't tell me these really sad tales of the husband or wife dying. And then the wife doesn't get any of the money because it goes back to the family. And I'm like, I'm already going to do this. But oh yeah, when I see Jeff, he's like, when's that Bob going to come around? I'm like, then I just give that sound. So dismissive.
Do you do house calls, Jeff?
By the way, bang hard on the window. He might be playing music.
I had Power Trip cranked before you came in, but then I stopped because I wanted to see if there were any updates on the Colangelo story.
Yeah.
So let's get into this. So do you want to set it up or shall I?
Oh, you can set it up.
All right. So The Ringer yesterday came out with a story, and it was originated from an unidentified source who said that Brian Colangelo, he believed, had up to 5 burner accounts through which he was disclosing all kinds of opinion about his own players, his fellow executives around the league, other stuff, and not doing it as Brian Colangelo, but just like one was called Eric Jr. There was another one called Too Many Unknown Sources. I forget the name of all the accounts, but he wasn't doing it as him. It was all incognito. And perhaps worst of all, disclosing team information, something that may have tipped off the Markelle Fultz deal that happened last year before the draft, Jahlil Okafor's health situation.
Yeah.
And so now the team so far has said that one of them, one called Philly 1234567, one account is from Brian Colangelo.
And he admitted it.
He admitted it. Yeah. He denies knowledge of 3 of them and says, and denies involvement in a fifth.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the story. I hope I got it through because it's a little convoluted.
It is, but no, that's it.
Yeah. Okay, good.
And by the way, one reason why they think that these are all related to Colangelo is they do all this analytics and just looking at all these accounts, and all 5 of these accounts followed similar people and tweeted about similar things. And it is very odd when some of these accounts would follow Philadelphia 76 beat writers, Philadelphia 76 players, and a coach on Upper Canada College here in Toronto, because the Colangelo's, one of their kids, goes to school at UCC. So following Philly stuff and a private school in Toronto.
Yeah, and there was a connection to the University of Chicago where his kid now plays. Yeah. So And also, the unidentified source had claimed that he has access to AI, an AI program that analyzes Twitter feeds to see similarities between them. And he harmonized all of them, this guy apparently saying it would be inconceivable to think that they didn't all come from one person.
Yeah.
And as soon as this story broke, the reporter who was behind it noted that three of the accounts were immediately deleted. One of them hadn't been used for months. But within minutes, three of them had been deleted right at the time that Colangelo would have been approached by the team. The reporter called back to the team and said, has anyone else been told about this? They said no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's when the big smoking guns. The reporter said, hi, Philadelphia. There's these two accounts that seem curious to me. And withheld the name of three other ones.
Right.
And those three other ones, soon after that conversation, those three all magically disappeared.
So all of this is circumstantial, but all of it is pretty damning.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk a little bit about, because I think it's inconceivable to think he wouldn't be fired if, in fact, it was proven that he was doing this.
Got to be fired.
Specifically, not just because you were saying stuff on Twitter, but more specifically because you can't tell the team's business.
Yep.
In a public forum.
Nope.
Like, you can't do it. How do we look at Brian Colangelo? Like, does that make him an arch-villain? Does that make him a victim of not understanding the medium?
Well, first, it makes him dumb.
Yeah.
More than anything else, this makes him dumb. Like, if you're going to create these accounts, you're in your mid-50s, you're two-time NBA GM of the year, and this is your downfall. Wow. But my first thought in all of this was you're reminded that these people are more insecure than you think. Because let's just focus on the one account that he admitted. We can get into the ones that they're alleged. He had an account set up so he could read things being said about him and his team. There's a little level of insecurity there. You know who also did that? Kevin Durant, where he used a fake accounts to defend himself. And this amazes me because in professional sports, the players and management, they come off as these are strong men. These are leaders. These are people that they do not care about the opinions of the non-players, the media, or the fans. And yet, two incredibly successful human beings displaying wild levels of insecurity that you would find in any regular person. That, for me, is the most fascinating thing of all this.
What I'm about to say is strictly my opinion. Okay. But having interviewed Colangelo a few times back when he was a Toronto executive, I found him to be quite vain and quite sensitive.
Yes.
That was just my opinion, strictly my opinion.
Yeah.
But in conversation, I found that how people perceived him was obviously important to him. I thought that was also true of Brian Burke, but in a very different way. I think Burke was very combative openly, which we know because we saw him have fights in public, right? Whereas Colangelo didn't seem to take the fight public, but he struck me as a guy who probably had a long memory about people who crossed him, that he was very concerned about how he was perceived. You know, he's got a long history. His family is an amazing story within the basketball world. His father is one of the great executives of all time. And he himself is a pretty brilliant guy in a lot of ways. You know, he was a former executive of the year when he was with, you know,
with Phoenix and Toronto.
Right. So, you know, this is a guy who was extremely accomplished on his own. I found him to be vain and was interesting within these burner accounts. He was defending his collars.
His collars.
Because he has the wide collars, the big collars, the kind of rich guy collars.
Rich guy collars. Yeah, the Bob Kraft rich guy collars.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. The Bob Kraft, you know, where you actually have a tie pin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Where the color of the collar is dramatically different than the rest of the shirt.
Yeah, blue shirt, white collar.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate that. But anyway, that's another story. So I think your point's a really interesting one, Matt, that there seems to have been a level of
insecurity.
It's something that drives this guy to want to know what's being said about me out there. And a lot of the things, if in fact it was him, a lot of it was pointed against Sam Hinkie, who is like a folk hero in Philadelphia for going through the process. Mm-hmm. And this kind of, and Colangelo's watch has been kind of marred by his big move was to trade up to get Markelle Fultz.
Yep.
Who hasn't worked out so far.
Has not. Jason Tatum's looked pretty good.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
The dunk on LeBron in game 7.
Oh yeah.
Oh no.
And if you're Colangelo, you come, you know, and I don't mean this in a bad way but he comes from more of an old school approach. Not that he doesn't, you know, use new school things, but if you have any old school in you, you look at Sam Hinkie as a disease. And I get why, because Hinkie decided we need to lose on purpose. In the hyper-competitive world of professional sports, this charlatan that comes to town that says we got to lose lots and lots, that's abhorrent, especially to more old school sports. Even though what Hinkie was doing, there's a lot of intelligence behind it, and it's working. So I think for him, he's probably has some resentment towards Sam Hinkie and towards how so many people in Philly love Sam Hinkie. So I get it. I totally get why Colangelo. I get the reason behind all of it, and I get the insecurity showing he's a human. But what a dummy!
So what? There are two things that really jump out at me. I'll take them in order here. The first one is it really raises the question: what's the role between an executive, a sports franchise, you know, upper executives, and disclosing information? Mm-hmm. You know, do we believe for one second that the columnists that write for papers or websites around the world aren't getting information from executives
of course.
The executives want out there for their own purposes?
Oh, yeah. They both sides use each other.
100%.
Total Game of Thrones.
I'm always amazed when someone will say, you know, oh, yeah, I emailed so-and-so after this event happened and they got right back to me. And you remember in that moment, I mean, you and I have been part of the media, but we didn't have those connections.
No.
You know, I had a couple of connections, one of them mostly to Jeff. You know, Merrick, what do you think of this?
Yeah, exactly.
And he'd be like, oh, wow, that's fascinating. Okay.
See, that was your connection. My connection was asking you, what did Jeff say? That's my only connection.
Merrick was my favorite guy to break down a game. When I was sick, I would call him every single day. And he and I, you know, we've been best pals for forever. And we would do game analysis. And after like about 2 months of that, he said, Bob, you got to get a blog.
Yeah,
you just got to get a blog. You got to, you know, we can't do this. And we would pick like the most random games too. It'd be like Detroit and Dallas playing tonight and we'd break it down. But anyway, relationships, right? Like the disclosure of information looks terrible when you do it through a burner account because you're trying to tilt a story in one direction or another.
Yeah.
But I got to believe there are executives all over North America who have columnists on speed dial and they're ready to disclose information because they want to control a story.
By the way, don't just limit this to executives, coaches, assistant coaches, also
players,
agents, as well. Player agents. They all listen in Game of Thrones. Jaime Lannister was trying to kill Jon Snow's half brother.
Right.
In the final season, he was joining up with Jon Snow. Man, alliances change. You use people when you need to use them.
And there's a lot of spiders out there to go back to Game of Thrones. The spider, Varys.
Yeah, yeah, you know, exactly.
Spinning his webs, controlling things.
Yeah.
The people who are successful are generally really good at that.
Unfortunately, right now, Brian Colangelo is like Littlefinger. Ah, man, for the Game of Thrones people that enjoy sports, that one was for you.
You know,
for everyone else, sorry.
He even kind of looks like Littlefinger. He's got like the short haircut and the, you know,
most
the kind
disappointing part
of affected
for me
fake royalty vibe.
Yeah, most disappointing thing for me the last season was
that he was killed?
Yeah, no, but just how? It's so obvious.
Yeah, you know, it was. I know.
I needed a little more. But anyway.
You and I have discussed the last season of Game of Thrones many, many times. Do you really want to get back into it now?
This is a mid-July conversation, not when you got all this going on. But yeah, I mean, getting back to it, they all leak to each other for their own purposes.
So it's almost like you got to launder information. Like you have to wash it through a legitimate source
you
so that
it
becomes
the right way.
Right. Yeah. Like that's the mob style, right? I got a whack of cash, right? Yeah. I can't just spend it. I got to filter it through a laundromat or a restaurant that I own behind the scenes.
Yeah. There's a right and a wrong way. And this analogy I'm going to give is very flawed. So bear with me. But, if you're doing a roast, you can say some horrible things. You can say things that some people will deem as racist. If you tweet the same thing, there's a good chance you're going to lose your show.
Yeah.
It's all about how you do it. You know, this
context and setting.
Yeah, it's all about, you know, what happened with Roseanne. And, you know, same thing here. If you go through, you know, you do leaks with, you know, a columnist, it's different than if you have burner accounts and you're tweeting all this hate.
Yeah, that is fair to say. The other thing I wanted to say is good on The Ringer. The Ringer is Bill Simmons's website.
Yeah.
They put out this story. Anybody who does investigative journalism in this day and age,
hard.
I think really hard to
timely,
do.
Timely,
costly. It's highly litigious.
Yep.
If this doesn't turn out to be true, then that's an enormous lawsuit.
Yeah, that is a good. Oh, yeah, that's a good point. If this turns out to be 100% false, that would hurt The Ringer to a huge extent.
100%. Like it's the kind of thing that you make or break.
Yeah.
See, it's tough, right? Because will it make the site? No, I think it'll garner them some respect,
yep.
But it won't make them. It won't make them rich. It won't suddenly triple the number of
hits
they get.
The risk is bigger than the reward.
100%. If it's not true, though, it could sink them.
Yep.
So I really, really, really respect it. Anybody who has the audacity, especially as an independent company, you know, to stand up and say, we believe in this story and we're going to go with it.
Before we move on, do you want me to do a read to Seat Giant? You have an alarm.
I got an alarm going off upstairs for some reason. Anyway,
someone breaking into your place, Bob?
Let's find out.
Yeah, let's find out. By the way, our Canadian partner on this show is Seat Giant. For concert tickets, sporting event tickets, everything and anything in North America, just go to seatgiant.ca. All tickets are in Canadian dollars. Yes, all tickets on seatgiant.ca are in Canadian dollars. Stop paying US. Stop trying to figure out the conversion. Seat Giant is a Canadian owned and operated company and guarantees every ticket to be legitimate. And as added bonus, when you go to Seat Giant, use the discount code Bob and Matt. That's Bob and Matt at checkout to save money. And when you go there, you just put in Bob and Matt. You will save. You will get a small discount. We get a small cut of that. Everyone wins. SeatGiant.ca is our sponsor. Much like our other one, of course, Jeff Pollock. Again, JeffPollock.com, 416-777-0088. Right now, just waiting for Bob Mackwitz. He's got to come back soon because, let's see, we got like 8 minutes. We got to do dot, dot, dot. Also, I have one quick thought on the upcoming provincial election.
Okay, I'm back. Well, why don't we start off with that?
Yeah.
Because you and I have a bet. I bet that Ford's going to win. You bet that Horvath's going to win.
I'm going to bet that Horvath is going to win.
Yeah.
And I'll never be able to pronounce her last name correctly.
Because it looks like Horwath?
Horwath and just Wath, Vath. Like, just like that's where if you have it all a lisp, that's just a complete disaster.
The NDP. The NDP is going to win.
You know what the great thing, like the biggest like card that the Trump card that the NDP can play here? With,
interesting choice of words,
I know. As I was saying, like, yeah, I can't think of a different. We have to find a new way to say Trump card. We have to find a new word. But like, I know almost nothing about politics. So take what I'm going to say with a huge grain of salt. Her best moment in the debates, Andrea's, was when she's like, Doug, people are already voting. The polls are open and you don't have a fully costed program, which is totally true. And this is one of the main reasons I think Doug Ford's going to sink, because you should kind of have one of those, you know, maybe a while back.
If you're the party of fiscal responsibility, you probably should have costed a few things out.
Yeah.
But the best line actually came from Wynn, in my opinion, where he was talking about healthcare. You know, we don't intend to have politicians tell you how this is going to work. We're going to go to the frontline workers, the nurses, the doctors, and take their advice on how to fix healthcare. And I think he thought, oh, wow, we look like, you know, conscientious, you know, party of the people. Yeah. And Wynn looked at him and said, or you could have asked them already and then you'd have a platform.
Yeah, it was great.
It was so good.
But I'll just say this. The NDP's plan, we all, like, it's the easiest one. It's like, so NDP, what are you going to do? We're going to spend lots and lots of money. We're going to help everyone. Hey, that's fantastic. How are you going to do it? And we're just going to, you know, tax rich people and corporations more. Yep. Like, it's pretty much the simplest. Like, it's not like this mind-blowing, they're changing the way politics are done. It's like, no, hey, rich people, we're going to use the word fair share over and over, but we've never really defined what the word fair means. Give us more money. It's great. It's, you know, it's like, yep, there it is.
I find that the Conservatives promise cheap gas and cheap beer, and the NDP promise cheap health care and child care. Uh-huh. And it's kind of the same thing. It's the carrot for that group that you're trying to talk to. Like, some people want gas and beer, and I don't blame them, because who doesn't want cheap gas and cheap beer?
Yeah.
You know, and then the other side is, we're going to fix your teeth for you, and we're going to provide child care, which if I have enough money to pay for my own, I don't care.
Yeah.
Right? I lean towards the left, generally, as you know.
Yep.
I found, actually, the last debate, I don't know how much debates actually matter, probably not very much, but I thought Wynn sounded like the most competent.
She did. After
the most competent potential leader for the next phase of Ontario life.
Beyond her opening, where I'm like, don't say I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you don't
like not me. Sorry, I'm not sure I liked.
I don't like that, because part of it is like, now you're making it personal. You know, people, you know what?
Well, people have made it personal, though.
Yeah, but the thing is, no one likes any politician. And you know why? You know why people don't like you, Kathleen?
It's not
because of you. It's because of your party. It's because you've been, how long you've been around for, and because mistakes you've made. Don't make it personal.
You know, it's
don't make it personal.
You know, from what I hear, Andrea Horvath's very top down. Doesn't necessarily listen to her ministers as much as she could. Mm. You know, Doug Ford doesn't really have any relationship with anybody, because he kind of is just in the moment. He's an in the moment guy.
You could see my friends.
You could even see it in that debate, right? Like when he had to talk policy and what he thinks and plans to do, he flounders. But when he's reacting to people, he's really good. And his brother was the same way.
Yeah.
Don't ask me what I think. Just tell me what I'm going to do with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Also, gas and beer, bad combination. One is used to fill up cars to drive. The other is alcohol.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. So we'll do a quick dot, dot, dot here. So anyway, you and I got 10 bucks riding on this.
Yeah.
I don't worry about winning or losing because you haven't paid off any of the bets that I've won so far.
Not yet.
Yeah. There's always a chance.
There's always a chance. All right. We got 4 minutes.
All right. So I one sentence and then Matt chooses what he wants to talk about. It's called dot, dot, dot. Hereditary is a damn good movie, but do not go see it if you are sensitive. Thank goodness for the World Cup this July because the Jays are getting hard to watch. Mm-hmm. And I don't care who knows it. I love American Ninja Warrior. And this one comes with a grade A burn from my daughter.
Okay, well, first off, American Ninja Warrior is awesome. So there's no
awesome show.
No debate. There is absolutely no debate. Hereditary, I've seen the previews for it.
Okay.
It looks awesome with
Toni Collette and Gabriel Byrne.
Yeah. Have you seen it?
I've seen it twice now.
How have you seen it? Did you get a screener?
I got passes because we interviewed did something with the director.
Okay, tell me about Hereditary.
All right, so here's the deal. It's not exactly what you would think from the trailer.
Ooh.
It's not misleading, okay, but there's a lot more. But there's a lot more to it.
Oh.
The thing is, every once in a while, a horror movie comes out, like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre did this, where they really go for it. Like the point is really to make you squirm in your seat.
Yeah,
and a lot of horror movies stop after, like, I liked A Quiet Place. I thought that was a very good movie.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like a hard movie to watch. You know, there were some moments that were tense.
No, it wasn't hard to watch. I thought it was brilliant, but it wasn't hard to watch.
You know the scene where she steps on the nail?
Yeah.
Right? And you go, oh my God, that's, and you just forget. Like, Hereditary is like that the whole way through.
Oh.
It's just like it puts you through the ringer. But I think that's remarkable in one sense because it's really hard to do that to an audience. We're pretty sophisticated and we've seen a lot of things. But like I would never tell my wife to go see it.
Okay.
No, like, and there's just too many things that are damaging to the individual psyche.
Oh, I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a freak show. By the way, do you want to hear the grade A burn about American Ninja Warrior and our final moments here?
Yeah, let's end on that.
So I'm watching with my daughter yesterday and she loves it. And she goes, Dad, one day can I do American Ninja Warrior? And I said, yeah, of course, honey. I think that'd be awesome. She goes, awesome. I bet Mom could do it too. And then she just stayed quiet.
No, you can't do it. We're signing you up for extra French lessons in the summer.
If I'm ever walking around the house without a shirt on, you know, like my grandfather did and his grandfather did before him, I'm sure, right? Or you got the undershirt on or something.
Yeah.
Her big thing is she runs over and starts slapping my stomach and goes, Tommy.
Oh, my God. That's so emasculating.
Oh, man. I'm just like, wow. I got to get in the gym.
Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.